Mr. Barrow Prieto, you were just telling me about Jack Cohen.
Well, Jack Cohen was a member of the YCL group in the Donegal Tweed Company. And Jack Cohen went and joined the International Brigade. And he was wounded. He had a very serious head wound, but he survived it. And what happened to him eventually, I can't remember.
You are quoting him as an example of the party's policy towards who should go and who shouldn't.
Yes, that's right. He was one of those who was permitted to go. But in general, the Communist Party policy was first to prevent any enemy infiltration, and secondly, to preserve the cadres of the Communist Party itself, which in a small organization is understandable.
Did you have anything to do with the hammering out of that policy?
Well, I agreed with it, and that's all that's to it. I was not involved in the Central Committee of the Communist Party. I was only in the leadership of the YCL. And the YCL did not discuss those questions, although later on the YCL discussed another very important political issue, which was the question of conscription, but that comes much later.
What was your reaction to the news that Chamberlain had declared war on Germany?
I regarded the possibility of war almost as a certainty. In fact, the problem of the German opposition already by 1936 was one in which the German opposition in general thought that the only way Hitler could be overthrown was if Germany was involved in the war. The German opposition under the Hitler regime was of the opinion that they couldn't mobilize the necessary strength to overthrow Hitler. And they felt, I know this from a lot of discussions also subsequently, that the only way Hitler could be removed if Germany was involved in the war, and therefore the declaration of war against Germany was something I had expected anyway, and I saw this as a possibility of the defeat of the Nazis.
So did you support Britain's war against Germany?
Yes, I certainly did. And I have a collection of letters which I wrote during the war, several hundreds which I've got, where I clearly demonstrate my political attitude towards the war and towards Britain. And I had this attitude also in the internment camp, where I played quite a leading role, both not so much in Britain as in Australia later.
So what was your attitude towards the party line, towards the war in September
1939? I had a very strange experience. As you may know, the Communist Party published a pamphlet by Pollitt called How to Win the War. And I tried to sell this. I did sell some copies, and I met a lot of opposition. Because of the line the party had taken previously on the question of Chamberlain, and it was suspect in the sense that some people thought that the declaration of war was phony, and that the question of Chamberlain fighting an anti-fascist war was also very questionable. I was very much surprised at the change in the Communist Party attitude, which obviously was came from the Soviet Union. Yeah, and I felt that this question of is this an anti-fascist war, is this an imperialist war, in my opinion, it was always an anti-fascist war, and not never an imperialist war, and I couldn't understand that, and I never supported that policy. Although I met the opposition to me selling the particular pamphlet, and of course you know what happened to Harry Pollitt, and the party line decisively changed.
What had been your attitude towards the German-Soviet Pact of August?
Well, a mixed sort of feeling. I was very much interested in the way the Soviet Union tried to form an anti-Hitler alliance, and this was continually being sabotaged. There was the delegation of Ernie Earl Drax to Leningrad on a slow boat. And it was obvious that there wasn't the determination of stopping Hitler and preventing Hitler from attacking the Soviet Union. And I felt that there may be some justification in the Soviet Union taking measures to prevent or certainly neutralize any effort to involve it in war with the Soviet Union. It was quite obvious to me, and had been for a long time, that the Western powers in general favored war against the Soviet Union because they were anti-Soviet for various reasons. And I could see that the Soviet Union had to take and did take measures to prevent it being involved in war. Therefore, it was very ambivalent. Since I didn't make the policy, I could see that they had to take measures if that were possible to prevent them being isolated and also being attacked by Germany if this was possible. I also the thing that happened afterwards, and that I've described as a matter of my own biography, was of course the attack by the Red Army on Finland. It was quite obvious to me that here was an attempt to prevent the attack and the successful attack on Leningrad itself. And subsequently, I've been in the area. I've had a good look at it. I've been in the Soviet Union quite a number of times, and especially in the Leningrad area. And it was quite obvious to me that the line the Red Army took and the Soviet Union took in relationship to Finland was correct.
But where does your ambivalence towards the German-Soviet Pact come in? Because it sounds as though you supported it.
I didn't make a policy. The point was, yes, that I saw the opposition of the Western powers to the Soviet Union and the encouragement they gave, in actual fact, to Hitler. And they were not able, for various reasons, political reasons, to form an alliance against the Nazis. This was quite obvious after Munich. And I realized that something, the Soviet Union was doing something to prevent them being attacked by the Nazis. Also, I had read Hitler's Mein Kampf, and it was obvious to me, not only the opposition. relation to the Jews, and but also the determination by Germany to have a war, and really the occupation of the Soviet Union is quite obvious from Hitler's Mein Kampf. And I saw that they were in a very difficult situation. But I mean, I didn't make the policy, and I could see a justification, because the other side weren't prepared to or organize an alliance. This was particularly so, and I knew quite a bit about this, even at the time, in relationship to Czechoslovakia. The problem with Czechoslovakia was that the Soviet Union was prepared to defend Czechoslovakia, provided Poland was prepared to let the Red Army go through Poland to aid the Czechs. But the Western powers wouldn't let that happen, and they actually prevented it.
What happened to you in the Communist Party organizationally in view of your support of Britain's war against Germany?
Nothing. Nothing. I've never had any disagreement or any nastiness in the Communist Party, except much later on. I was opposed, for instance, to the action of the communist of the Soviet Union against Czechoslovakia. That was what was in 68, and at the time I was in Germany actually, and I had contact with leading communists in the GDR, and I was appalled, and I expressed this also in the Communist Party. I was appalled at that particular line. And later on, I was also for the dissolution of the Communist Party later on in 89, because I didn't think there was any purpose in continuing the way it was going. But that's much later on. But at the time, there were discussions, but there were no hard feelings or no real decision. I mean, it wasn't really anything that. There were no hard feelings, let's put it this way. People had different opinions, and that's what it was.
But presumably, by party discipline, you weren't expected to go out and say, onto the streets, and say that you supported the war.
Well, this was a very funny business, because in actual fact, the pamphlet by Harry Pollard wasn't really withdrawn. It wasn't. The arguments continued, and in general, the Communist Party's attitude, even if it didn't express it 100% in the daily work at that time, was that this was an anti-fascist war. There was no question about it.
Now, did you appear before a tribunal in September 1939?
Yeah, not in September, in October.
Can you describe what happened?
Well, yes, sir. In September, first of all, I was summoned to the police, and I was told that I wasn't supposed to ride my motorbike or own a motorbike, a bicycle, or mats, or God knows what, and that I had to report all my different movements to the police. And by the way, I've got my alien's passport, so you can have a look at it, it's very interesting. And then I was summoned to a tribunal in October. I think it was October the 7th, maybe the 13th. It's in my book. I was interviewed in the tribunal by a magistrate, a full-time magistrate, yes, stipendary, Mr. Holmes. And I was asked some questions. Where's your passport? What's your name? And they asked me, where's your passport? And I said, I don't really know where it is. I might have lost it. Anyway, he said to me, you've been turned until further notice. That was all that happened. And I was interned, and that's a long story. The intern was a long story.
When was that, that you were interned?
In October. I think it probably was October the 13th. I can look at the exact date. I'll put it in my biography as well. It was either the 7th or the 13th.
What were your feelings on hearing that?
I was annoyed. I was really annoyed.
Did you say anything to him?
No, I don't think I said anything to him. I tried to get hold of the documentation, yeah? I asked, said the Public Records Office, and one of the people there said, we won't release this for 100 years. I don't know whether that was a final sort of thing, but I tell you, I've done some work at the Public Records Office, and I've got some of the documentation here about Mosley, and they won't release the interviews with Mosley for another 75 years or so. You know about that?
No, I didn't. But to come on to your personal story, once you got this news, what then happened to you in detail?
Oh, in detail. Well, first of all, I was taken home, and I lived in a flat above Jack Jones. I had what happened during the 1930s. My parents had applied for naturalization in 1936, and was refused. And we found out through leaks that was refused because of my political activities. And my parents were furious, as you can imagine. And what happened then is they applied again in 1938. And they said it would be better if I left home. And I left home. First I lived with some friends of mine who worked within the factory. A family called Brown was very friendly with them. One of the Brown brothers was a manager at the Donegal Tweed Company. And unfortunately, this lad I went to live with at his home was killed in the Normandy landing. And I lived in this with that family, the Brown family in Liverpool, for a short while, and then I took a flat in Bedford Street, which was a couple of houses away from where my parents lived. And I lived in the same, I lived in a flat above Jack Jones, where he lived with his wife at that time. And the police came to the flat. And of course I cleared everything out because I expected after the interview with the police in September, I thought, well, they're going to intern me, I've got no chance. So I took everything out of the flat, all my books, all my papers. There wasn't a thing left in it. I had to remove my bicycle and my motorbike. And they came to the flat looking at things. I said, do you find anything here? Sorry. And there was nothing there at all they could take away, not a piece of paper, nothing. So my father was interned the same day, and it caused a sensation in Liverpool, I can tell you.
His internment?
And mine. Oh, yes. Because at the time, I was the chairman of the youth committee of the Liverpool Trades Council. I've been a Trades Council delegate, and I was very prominent in the Tailors and Garment Workers Union. I wasn't only on the district committee of the Communist Party, I was the assistant branch secretary of the Tailors and Garment Workers Union, and I was on the Liverpool Trades Council, and I was the chair of its youth advisory committee. And was very friendly with the leadership of the Liverpool Labour Party, especially Luke Hogan, and I was very friendly with the Braddocks at that time. And a caused a sensation because I was known as an anti-fascist, as a German. And, my news were well known. It caused a real sensation. And they locked me up with my father in the police station in Liverpool, and it was very uncomfortable. And not only was it uncomfortable, but it, as during the whole of the war period, Britain didn't comply with the 1929 Convention on Prisoners of War or internees. Very annoying. They didn't even feed me. The food had to be brought in, which was very, very annoying. And I was there for a couple of days, very uncomfortable. And I described this in my autobiography. The funny thing that happened in the police station was this. During the 1930s, the Communist Party in Liverpool had been the source and the organization which smuggled anti-fascist literature to Hamburg. Docker's organization and Jack Jones were particularly prominent in this, and I was involved too. And whilst I was in this cell in the police station, a bloke came in by the name of Apple. He was a member of the German Communist Party. He was a seaman the British had picked up somewhere, because what happened at the beginning of the war, German shipping was not only curtailed, it was stopped everywhere. And German seamen serving also on Allied boats or any other boats were taken off them in turn. And he came into our cell in Liverpool and, of course, started a conversation with me. He was a member of the German Communist Party. He'd been a sailor in the in 1916 and 18 in the German Navy, and he had been a participant in the revolt of the sailors and the revolution. He was actually a sailor who had already been in a mutiny and led apparently a mutiny on one of the battleships in 1916, and then he was in the vanguard of the sailors who went to Berlin in 1918, and he came to the cell. And this was really a wonderful experience, because we started to discuss what had happened to our literature from Liverpool to Hamburg. Oh, he said, the Gestapo never got any of it. It all went through, and it made my day, because we never knew whether any of the stuff got through. And he confirmed and said that, oh yes, we got it through all right. Because what happened, there was a weekly boat from Liverpool to Hamburg, all during the 1930s, yes, and this weekly boat, the literature, went to Hamburg and was picked up by the Hamburg Communist Party. And he said, oh, so all got through, we got everything. So that was it made my day. And after that, from Liverpool, I was taken to, with my father, to Clacton. That was very funny. I was taken to Lime Street Station, and we had an escort of three soldiers, some young lads. They were flabbergasted at the sort of, they were told they were very dangerous Nazis, and there was my old father. It was me. And they could see, of course, this was absolute bullshit. And we had a very, very interesting journey to Houston. And then we were taken to Liverpool Street Station. And the funniest thing happened in Liverpool Street Station. The soldiers were very hungry, so were we, and they were very thirsty. And they were armed And it was us with my father and me. And I don't know whether I put this amongst them, I can't remember that. Anyway, there were these dangerous enemy aliens, category A, and the three soldiers. And what they said, look, we're hungry, we're piling our stuff here, yeah, in Liverpool Street Station, with our guns. And they went for food, and we had to watch their guns and their equipment. It was absolutely ridiculous, but I've had many of those ridiculous experiences, but that would actually happen. They were flabbergasted at the sort of people whom they had to watch. The next thing that happened, we were taken to Clacton. And in Clacton, we were met by a Rolls Royce of Eastern Command. We were taken by a Rolls Royce to the to Woodlands Camp in Clacton. That was the first internment camp. It was an absolute bloody mess. I've never seen anything like it. They used buttons in an internment camp, and it was complete chaos. A complete mess. They made a mess of it. Anyway, it was only the beginning of the war, but it was a mess. And we were in Clacton a short while. My father was very ill, actually. My father had a heart attack already in Liverpool, and was very ill. And from Clacton, my father was taken by ambulance to a hospital in the south of England where he was for months. And from Clacton, I was taken to Seaton. And I was in Seaton for a long time, and I've described this business in Seaton. I was there from about the end of October, it probably was the end of October till July the 1st, 1940.
What was your father's attitude towards you? Did he blame you for being interned?
I don't know whether he blamed me at all. He was, my father was terribly annoyed. And his annoyance in this his excitement caused him to have a heart attack. And he didn't particularly blame me anymore. I think that the relationship with my father after that, after the second naturalisation fiasco, because he wasn't naturalised then either in 1938.
So he was refused naturalisation again?
He was refused again, but I wasn't involved. I was no longer involved because I didn't even live with him. And I didn't apply. At the time, I didn't apply, I thought it was hopeless. Anyway, the relationship with my father was okay, and he was then released from the hospital. He came to Seaton, and he was looked after by a lot of friends and by me in the Seaton camp. He recovered. My father eventually died, actually, in 1918. He was 70, yeah, it was nearly 97. But the internment caused him a lot of trouble. It also wounded him financially, it wounded his business. And it was completely ruined for him, actually, the internment.
What kind of people were with you at Seaton?
A mixture. There were. First of all, many German